Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us on this weekend edition of Trumpet Radio Live here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm as well. Lots to talk about today. A hurricane out there in Florida. How's that doing? We'll check up on that. Also, which country has the best computer programmers in the world? It's not the U.S. You'll be surprised by the details. Iran's going to start to play hardball, so they say, with the U.S. And many more stories on the way this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us on this weekend edition, 101.3 KPCG online, kpcg.fm, live link there at thetrumpet.com as well. Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon with you here today. Hurricane going on out there in the Florida region. So we didn't have a hurricane, obviously, here in Oklahoma. We did have a storm recently, and then today it rained a little bit this morning. And I ride my bike to work. Occasionally. And so today I was going to ride my bike into work, and I looked outside and I thought to myself, it looks like it's going to rain. And then I did the dumb thing, which was check the app on my phone, and it said, don't worry, no rain. It rained.
Yes,
and
it did.
It rained on me as I came into work. So it wasn't horrible. I got a little bit wet, but I know better than to trust that app. But somehow I always keep coming back.
That's so funny. Yeah. Well, at least you have showers downstairs if you ever need to like just wear athletic clothes as you bike to work and then change into your nicer clothes once you're here.
Yep, we have all the amenities that you would need here in this.
It would be nice if I worked around here all the time because then I could just do the same thing.
Yeah, it's pretty nice, but a little bit of rain, which is always good. We can always use that. But this hurricane out there in Florida is nothing horrible, I suppose, in terms of major catastrophe yet. But it came through, brought some flooding, of course, in some areas, knocked out power to 150,000 people. So if you're one of those, you think, hey, it was pretty severe. But they say Hurricane Herman brought strong winds and flooding to a wide swath of Florida's Gulf Coast on Friday, knocking out power to more than 150,000 people, raising fears of additional damage as the storm swept across the state. And, of course, as those move inland, they always lose power and strength, but they do dump a lot of rain. So that's what they're looking at, quite a bit of rain potentially. The winds were 80 miles per hour and extended 45 miles per hour from the eye before weakening over land. So downgraded to a tropical storm and not as severe as certainly some that we've seen, but a good amount of rain coming in. I guess it was the first hurricane in 11 years for Florida. So
that's what I heard. It's so hard to believe. It seems like they would be getting hit every single year by one of those.
I can remember some pretty big ones coming through there, so that always makes me feel pretty old when they're like, it hasn't happened in 11 years, and I was like, really? It seemed like it was just a couple weeks ago.
What does that mean? Because haven't hurricanes at least caused damage in Florida? Is this talking about a direct hit where it starts there, maybe?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what they were getting that figure from, but haven't had, I guess the biggest ones we've had recently have been more in the Gulf, mm-hmm. we think of those. But anyway, so I guess we're in hurricane season to some extent, so we'll see what happens moving forward throughout the year. It's always impressive when you see them from the satellite imagery. You see that big storm. Mm-hmm. Those are always impressive. So they always put those up. It's got that perfect circle, really. And it's interesting because if you're ever watching the weather, especially here in Oklahoma, they're always during severe weather, they'll look at the footage and they'll say, oh, I can see this developing here and here, or they'll look at the radar and they can pinpoint little things. But hurricanes are pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Any one of us could be like, I think there's a hurricane right there.
Yeah, it's massive on the screen. I wonder why they call them after humans. They name them human names like Hermine and Katrina, and I'm pretty sure Peter was one of them one time. Every time I look at one of those on a map, I don't think of a human being.
Yeah, It is interesting. I guess I had to pick something. Hermine. So I was wrong. I said
well,
Hermine.
That's what I was reading the new script earlier, yeah. And that's what
it is. Okay.
I looked it up.
I think you're right. Yeah. That's I was looking at that name and I'm like, what?
I thought it was Hermione. At
okay.
First.
Hermine.
But I looked it up. Thankfully,
you can tell
that.
I haven't been watching stories on this. I've been reading them. So
right.
Well, good. So I learned something there about the pronunciation as well. This is an interesting story here from Iran. From the Business Insider, of course, there's been a lot of headlines about Iran recently. It's talked about on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today somewhat, too. This one says Iran may start to play hardball and avoid negotiating with the U.S. They're going to start to play hardball?
Yeah.
It says sustaining the inflammatory attacks against the U.S. Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei said on Wednesday that Tehran should avoid negotiations with the U.S. on any issues while boosting its offensive military capabilities. That's a fine thank you for all the help the U.S. has given them.
We haven't actually been negotiating with them this whole time. We've been talking to them and conceding every time. There's been no negotiations at all.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, they don't even try to hide their disdain. It says when facing the U.S., Khamenei said at a military exhibition that it is wrong to assume that common points and understanding can be worked out through negotiations, which I think is really interesting because he's saying, hey, we can't work out anything through negotiations. And on our side, that's all you hear is negotiations can solve everything.
Mm-hmm.
But the people we're negotiating with are saying publicly that that'll never work.
Yeah, we hear that negotiation, strong diplomacy is what can avert all wars, and that's always the best solution. Sometimes we should be doing what Iran is doing and just saying, well, we're not going to negotiate because there's not a thing they can do about it otherwise.
Yeah, but really, you know, I think what they're doing here probably, I mean, this is kind of similar to their rhetoric always, but the one thing that the current U.S. administration really, really, really wants is to negotiate with them. Like that, like they want it so bad.
It's an obsession, really.
Yeah. And here they're just saying, we're not going to negotiate with you. It's like the thing they can keep holding over our head. They shouldn't be able to. It shouldn't make any difference. But because they probably are doing it specifically because they know that's the one thing that they want so bad.
It's almost as if President Obama, at the start of his presidency, he said, who's an enemy that we've had for a long time that I can make peace with and then be known as this great negotiator, this great peacemaker? This is something that seems like it's part of his long-term legacy. So he is determined to make it work, even though time and again we've been shown that they don't want that at all.
Yeah, and I read something pretty interesting recently. It kind of ties in with one of our headlines yesterday about that rocket that exploded. NASA, of course, they've been having a lot of budget cuts over the last 8 years. And so that came up. What were they going to do with NASA? Were they going to, you know, fund them, how much or not? And the biggest thing that NASA said they heard from the current administration was to make sure they highlighted all the contributions to space exploration to the Islamic community, which I don't know that there have been very many, but that was their big push. Make sure that you really highlight how much they've helped with our space exploration as opposed to like the nuts and bolts of we need so much money to actually do it and we need funding and we need, you know, that type of thing. That wasn't the concern. It was highlighting the Islamic community's involvement in space exploration.
So it's more about making a certain group of people feel good than actually accomplishing the job that they actually received the money to do.
Exactly. And that it gets right back to the point you were making about let's see who has been an enemy traditionally and do whatever we can to make them feel good about themselves, no matter what.
No matter what. Yeah, exactly. There's nothing that would ever indicate that they'll change their stance toward us. They do always call America the great Satan. How do we think that a nation that thinks that about us is ever going to change their mind?
Yeah, it's you wouldn't believe it if you weren't living through it. It's like it's one of those things you just wouldn't believe. Here's an interesting story today, too. Which country has the best computer programmers? They say, hint, it's not the U.S. They say, if you've ever wondered about which country produces the best programmers, wonder no more. A new report from California-based HackerRank, a service that administers tests to developers around the world, says that it's China, which I don't think is surprising. Second place for the best programmers, computer programmers, goes to Russia. Coming in third is Poland, which that one I was a little surprised by. Not for any particular reason, just because I didn't know, I didn't think of them in that as being in the programming field to that level. It says traditional programming powerhouses like the U.S. and India came in 28th and 31st, respectively. And do you know why? I'll give you a guess as to why we've dropped so far.
Because we get hacked all the time.
Well, that's we do. That's true. As far as the upcoming programmers, like the developing programmers, there's not the focus on the math and the science in the education.
Yeah, I feel strongly about that.
Yeah, because you teach a math class.
Right, and I just, every year, the students disdain math, and I tell them, you know, there are a lot of good purposes for it, and it even just helps you think better.
They say, according to our data, this is that Hacker Rank place, they say China and Russia score as the most talented developers. Chinese programmers outscore all other countries in mathematics, functional programming, and data structure challenges, while Russians dominate in algorithms, the most popular and the most competitive arena. So they say the U.S. is positioned at number 28 behind countries like Japan, Greece, and Chile. Might seem odd, especially for the country that basically birthed the internet and created so many of the coding tools used today. This could potentially correlate to a lower emphasis on maths and sciences in American schools, according to a Pew Research report. So the focus isn't as much on the math and the science here in the U.S. like it used to be, according to the polls. And now we're seeing programmers that are coming in way at the bottom of the list. So those two are probably very much related.
Yeah, and you think about a lot of the typical Chinese families who live in the U.S., they're known for the kids going home and they study hard and they practice that their instruments or their talents really hard. And they're just basically outworking the average American by far. That's what a lot of math comes down to, is just hard work, concentration. And we don't really have that much of an ability in that area.
Well, and it's interesting too, because sometimes when the topic of video games comes up, people that say that are more proponents for video games being played will throw out that, well, yeah, but it'll help them with computers and being programmers and such. Well, not according to this poll. You need to know, you need to understand math and science.
Yeah.
So unless you're playing Number Munchers all day.
Well,
have
you ever played video games and the whole time just been thinking, oh yeah, I'm learning so much about math right now. My brain kind of just dulls the whole time. I'm not thinking about how it's benefiting me in any way.
Yeah, I've never looked at one and thought, I wonder how they've programmed this game.
Exactly.
Now, there are probably some that do and could probably do well with it. But again, it gets back to some basic core classes and working hard, like you said. I mean, some people are going to have a strength in it and others won't, but you have to work at it. Now, I took a programming class in college, and it was great because it taught me you should not be a programmer. But I learned that firsthand. So now I know.
At least you received a healthy dose of reality from the start.
I did. There were two parts to the course, and the first part was just mapping out on paper the way you wanted the program to run. The second part was making it run. I did very well at the mapping out on paper how I wanted it to run. The programming part did not work. So
who knows?
Maybe. I'm a dreamer, but I need somebody that can actually fulfill my dreams.
Hey, Steve Jobs. That's what he did. He had the ideas. He was able to communicate them to the technical experts, and they got the job done. And look at where Apple is today.
Yeah.
Maybe you could be the next Steve Jobs.
I quit too soon. but it is an interesting story. But it does also relate to this other story that shows kind of the other side of the equation, because you could look at this ranking of the best programmers and the fact that the U.S. doesn't put the emphasis on math and science like it should and think, okay, we just need math and science. It's all we need. But that's not the case either. So interesting write-up here from the Washington Post. It says, meet the parents who won't let their children study literature.
Wow.
So there's some that are saying it's a waste of time. It says, they talk about how basically in the beginning of this article, and it's pretty lengthy, it's worth a read if you get a chance. But basically in the beginning, they're talking about how many parents think that a liberal arts education is a waste of time. And so you could look at that first story we talked about with the programming and then say, well, yeah, I mean, why are we wasting our time with liberal arts when we need to be hammering these other things? Of course, math and science is part of a liberal arts education as well. But it's interesting because at the end of this article, they talk about the fact that really, if you look at the numbers of people doing well with jobs, it doesn't always go back to, well, they just hammered this one particular skill set. Because they say people are afraid that they're going to, you know, have a liberal arts education and work at a Starbucks the rest of their lives. But they say that's not really the case.
Yeah, I don't know why people would think that you should only focus on one or two subjects. Why not just get all around competent and skilled in all of them? When it comes time to pick a career, then you can maybe hammer into one a little bit more. It doesn't mean that you should ignore all the other ones the whole time you're being educated.
Yeah, they say in today's fast-changing global economy, the most successful enterprises aren't looking for workers who know a lot about only one thing. They are seeking employees who are nimble, curious, and innovative. The work done by lower-level accountants, computer programmers, engineers, lawyers, and financial analysts is already being outsourced to India and the Philippines, and soon it will be done by computers. The good jobs of the future will go to those who can collaborate widely, think broadly, and challenge conventional wisdom, precisely the capacities that a liberal arts education is meant to develop. So I don't know that I would agree with every single point they're making there, but I agree with the overall premise, I think.
Yeah, I think that even applies to pretty much any job. You think about even athletics. What about a guy who only can shoot the basketball well, but he can't play any defense? He doesn't even know how to dribble or pass or rebound. It doesn't make sense that you would think limiting your education and focusing it so much on one point would actually be an advantage.
Well, and that's even a really good point with sports, because there was a story out a few months ago about some of the catastrophic injuries you're seeing where people's legs just snap, which just even happened this week with Teddy Bridgewater from the Vikings, non-contact, and his leg just exploded, basically. And they're saying, they kind of pinned it on two things, they think. One is poor nutrition growing up. Number two is a lot of these guys focus on one sport only and do it all the time, that they put the same pressure, the same torque, the same, hammer the same parts of the body. And because they're not playing a wide range of sports, they're prone to more injuries. So there probably is something to that. And educationally, it's the same sort of thing. Mm-hmm. If you just hammer one thing and you ignore all the other subjects, you're not able to adapt as well when it comes to careers, they're finding out.
A lot of those athletes, even their training is focused so much on one area. A lot of athletes probably don't focus on strengthening leg muscles as much as they would the upper body either, and that could cause a lot of injuries. Even talking about nutritionally, those people who grow up with a bad diet and are zoned in on just a few unhealthy foods and eating those all the time, they have all the injuries as well. I mean, pretty much any area you can think of, if people are only zoned in on one thing, it's a huge disadvantage, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, if you think about that, if you just did arm curls all day,
yeah,
you'd have some strong biceps, but the rest of your body would be not able to handle.
That's actually one of the least functional movements as well, because how often do you just grab something and then just start curling it?
Usually
in
when
everyday
eating,
life.
When I'm eating, putting something in my mouth. They say this, talking about these careers and education, they say what we are constantly reminding parents is that the world is an incredibly dynamic place, and that what's most important is for students to develop an entrepreneurial mindset, said Andy Chan, vice president of personal and career development at Wake Forest. They need to think not just about the first job, but a lifetime of jobs. And then they go on to point out that most people don't end up working in what they exactly studied. You know, like they say, people might be a physics major, but a lot of them don't become physicists. Now, they're certainly going to take part of what they learned and use it. But their point is, look, these liberal arts educations, they can really help people be well-developed. But, again, you've got to be careful with what you put into that liberal arts package. You know, you can take a lot of really useless classes in that as well.
Really classes that won't help at all. But even just think about the sad case of people who have trained their entire lives for one type of job and then get fired. And then they say, well, I don't have any other skill that I feel comfortable practicing in a job. I mean, that is reality. That's life. Sometimes people get fired.
That well, that happens all the time, or industry changes. Radio is a great example of that, because I started working in radio 20 some years ago. And so what happens is people really, you know, there was a specific way you went about things, and they were in radio and doing certain things, and then the model for radio changed. The internet came along, and people weren't listening to the radio the same way. So what does that mean? Well, it means a lot of people lost their jobs. But the ones that were nimble and could adjust figured out that, you know what, you can still do this. It's just a different way. Now it's a podcast. Mm-hmm. Now it's, podcast probably be the best example. But there's ways that skill set is still very valuable. You just have to change the way you're doing it. Mm-hmm. Some people adapted, some didn't. And the nimble ones did.
The well-rounded ones. And that's just amazing how that even has a lot of encouraging parallels into personal life and just trying to be balanced in every aspect. It does just show that focusing in on one thing or only liking one form of entertainment even can be detrimental.
So a liberal arts education is not a bad thing. They say you might not expect college freshmen to understand that careers don't proceed in a straight line, but surely their parents ought to. In other words, you're typically going to have a few different jobs. In the real world, they say most majors don't become physicists and so on. But they said you'll find a surprising number of philosophy majors at hedge funds and lots of political science majors at law firms. The author says, I was an American studies major. Among chief executives of the largest corporations, there are roughly as many engineers and liberal arts majors in total as there are undergraduate majors in business, accounting and economics combined. So it's not that you just have to study this one specific area and then go do that job. The more you know, well, the better off you are. And so they're saying, look, you should read, and you should learn music, and you should do some things that are valuable, even if you don't become a professional musician or an author.
Yeah.
Just because you're not an author doesn't mean there's no value in learning to read and write.
Yeah, pay attention in those supplementary classes, not just your favorite one, because that just limits your possibilities later in life.
And I think, really, if you look at these two stories combined about Americans being really low on the totem pole in terms of programming, computer programming, and then you look at this other side where some are trying to focus so much on one thing and ignoring the liberal arts education. And you take all of that and you just look at some of the stories we talk about at universities where their big concern is social justice. Well, how much does that pay, though? I mean, if you just want to be practical, how much does it pay to be a malcontent and to stir up trouble? You know, there might be a few that make money off of it. Actually, there are. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing productive about it. And if they're so concerned about being offended, how do you get to class on time and do your assignment?
I don't know. It just seems like life would be a minefield of possible offenses, and you couldn't really navigate it.
Give them something else to complain about when they don't have enough money later on.
Yeah.
So 1% that went to school and paid attention. But
it's their fault that they paid attention in school and got rich.
Why do you have to make these tests so hard? That does happen. You hear people say that. Well, I don't do well in this test. It's racist. Well, what are you talking about? just take the test. Just study for it.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, in general, I was talking about some of the Chinese families who move here. They do way better academically, and it's not because of their race. It's because of their culture, where the parents, for hours, oversee their children working hard in every single subject.
Yeah.
That's not a racist thing. That's actually a great thing that the Chinese have done that we should all try to follow.
Yep, hard work always pays off in some fashion. So kind of interesting write-up there. It is worth reading it if you get the time. Washington Post, meet the parents who won't let their children study literature. So it's pretty long, but it's a good one. There's a list here, Grant, of the most attractive cities in America and the least attractive cities. So this is in relation to the city in general, maybe the people also. It's a combination, I guess. So it's not my list. So just got to roll with it. What do you want to do first, the most attractive or the least attractive? Maybe the least attractive first, then
okay.
We'll do the positive ones.
Always try to follow it up with the positive. That's
try to we, follow it up.
That's what yeah. we do here.
Yep. So the least attractive cities will start number 8 and go to number 1 for the worst. Number 8, sorry, Atlanta, Georgia. You are
wow.
the 8th most least attractive. Is that the way to say it? The 8th most least? You are the 8th least attractive.
8th least attractive.
City, yeah.
I think.
I won't overthink it.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
They know what we mean. Number seven is Tampa, Florida. Apparently, people. I have not been to either.
Both of those
city.
Are surprising.
Yeah. Number six, Cleveland, Ohio. Not that surprising.
Yeah.
Number five, my not too far from where I grew up, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Fair enough. True enough, I think. Kind of an industrial town. Number four, Charlotte, North Carolina. Number three, Spokane, Washington. Number two, Sacramento, California. And number one, least attractive city, according to this list, Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Where's Detroit, though?
I was
sure that would be on the list.
I am surprised by that as well. Yeah, they were not on the list for
or
some
even
reason.
Chicago. I mean, it's got a lot of attractions there, but
yeah.
The other things offset that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm not sure where Detroit would show up, but it seemed like it would have been in there just because of the economic downturn, especially. Mm-hmm. Most attractive cities, according to this list, number eight, Denver, Colorado.
That's a really good one.
Yeah, it's a nice one out there. Number seven, Charleston, South Carolina. So it's kind of funny because you've got Charleston on the most attractive list and Charlotte there on the least attractive.
Yeah, Charlotte I thought was a pretty city too, but then that might have some other issues I don't know about.
Yeah, number six they say is Nashville, Tennessee, most attractive cities. I don't know. I've driven through there and I wasn't that impressed. A lot of road construction at that time.
Were the people nice?
I didn't stop to find out. I just kept on rolling. Number five, San Diego, California.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. That
one's awesome.
Number four, Salt Lake City, Utah. Mm. So I've been out in that region, and that was nice enough. I don't know that I thought, like, wow, this is a very attractive city, but it was okay.
Did you go to a Utah Jazz game?
I did not. No, that did not make it
there. Could enhance the overall quality of their city. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. Number three, Scottsdale, Arizona. Number two, Boulder, Colorado. And number one most attractive city in the United States is Honolulu, Hawaii.
Oh, they're going to throw Hawaii in there, huh?
Got to throw in Hawaii in the mix. So anyway, I don't know. I think there'd probably be a lot of debate with those because a lot of cities have a lot of nice parts and not such nice parts. I am surprised that Alaska didn't make the list.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think just the natural beauty of some places would be pretty nice, but maybe not. Oklahoma City, we didn't factor in one way or the other. So I guess that's good that we're not least attractive.
Yeah, and if you were talking about the city that's probably improved the most in the last 20 years, Oklahoma City was just a bunch of warehouses downtown, and then it's all changed.
Yeah.
So another 20 years might be on that.
They'll be back to warehouses
list.
Again.
No, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It'll decline like Detroit. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Hopefully, it'll keep being nicer. But anyway, kind of interesting list, and hopefully, you're in one of those good cities. And if you're not, then you can assume that it was like the neighborhood down the road, not you.
Hopefully,
we have listeners all over at kpcg.fm in these different cities. So we had a listener from Washington D.C. email us the other day, and. They're not in any of these, but they are close to Baltimore, Maryland, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So everything out there is pretty close.
Yeah, that would be one of the more dangerous cities, probably. A lot of dangerous neighborhoods near there.
Yeah, you know, I'm surprised Washington, D.C. didn't make the list of beautiful because when you get down by the White House and the Capitol and the monuments and everything, that's really, really nice.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it didn't get in there, but...
Probably a variety of factors are taken into consideration there, though. If it was just talking about physical beauty, I'd think somewhere like Seattle would be on there, too. That one was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that as well. But so anyway, that's a list of some of those cities. And again, that's probably somebody's opinion, but they took a few opinions, and that's what they came up with. Key of David programs coming up here in a little bit on KPCG. Lots of programs this weekend. We'll be playing several of them. And if you need to watch any of those videos or would like to do that, you can go to thetrumpet.com and watch that. I actually just got a text from my wife. She said, what about Seattle?
Oh, yeah, I know.
Because she's from that area, so she's offended as well.
Yeah, my mom is from Eastern Washington, but she always liked it a lot over there in Seattle as well.
So anyway, I didn't make the list. I'm just reading it. I don't have any big thought on it. I'm just reading the list.
I think we outnumber the list though. So
yeah,
more than one person mentioning Seattle.
We'll put them on as a honorable mention, I guess.
There you go.
Yeah. So anyway, but make sure, yeah, you do this for the Key of David this weekend. We're going to have a few programs going through. Some of the newer ones we'll be playing, and we have a new one for you coming up today as well. So make sure you listen for those. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury. He talked about a few topics, including Iran, and he really talked more about one of the stories we talked about just the other day, where it's come out now, of course, that Iran is getting exemptions and loopholes from this in this deal. And so they kind of are doing whatever they want. And that's come out in the news. And it's funny because only a day or two later from that, you don't hear much about it anymore. It's kind of like just gone down the stream.
There's so many thick, filthy layers to this Iran deal. It's like we just keep peeling back more and more dirt that has been part of this deal the whole time, but that was never revealed to us at the beginning.
Yeah, and on top of it just being a really bad deal, it's just the fact that the public's been lied to. Mm-hmm. You think people would be upset about that.
Worthy of impeachment, you would think.
Yeah, and there's some sort of penalty for lying to the American public.
I guess it doesn't matter anymore.
It's getting to be that way where it's like it doesn't matter, I guess. It doesn't factor in. So anyway, that's really interesting, and he talks also about some of the history about the attempted assassination of President Reagan from back there in the early 80s. So lots of good topics today on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Make sure you listen for that this weekend, and then, of course, we do encourage binge listening on the weekends. We do say, hey, why not, you know, just download a bunch, and if you miss one, just catch up on the weekend.
We have a long weekend, too.
3 days.
This is a perfect weekend for binge listening.
Yeah, it is. Get yourself a triple cheeseburger, and you can spend an entire day.
My wife was begging me to take part in that challenge last night.
Oh, really?
If she could. Oh. Not even me, but I'll probably do it if she does.
Was she going to compete against you in the triple cheeseburger challenge?
We'll probably just eat the same one and win.
I wonder if you could do that. If you could team
totally
up on
be
it,
cheating. But
it's like in wrestling, you know, where they have the tag team. And you got to tag in.
It's okay in wrestling.
Tag in on the burger.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I guess if you're not eating it at the same time and you have two people, but then you'd be eliminating the factor of eating it while you're borderline sick. So
you know what,
that would give you a pretty big advantage there.
Yeah, what you could do is get a really big sweater that you could get a couple of people inside of, and then just keep popping different heads out.
Yeah,
when no one's looking,
or a baggy sweater and just accidentally drop some of it down there. It'd be kind of gross, but at least you'd win.
I think I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that challenge is over yet or not. I think it might be coming up. That's what was the name of that place? Wayback Burger.
Wayback Burger.
Yeah,
it's delicious. By the way,
I'm actually, based upon what you said yesterday, I'm thinking about trying it out. Not the challenge, but just go on there in general to. They're not a sponsor of ours. We're just giving them love for no reason.
Them and Burger King, I guess. Yeah. They're the beneficiaries of this show.
Yeah. Yep, that's right. I had somebody ask me the other day that listens. They asked about the Whopperito again because we had talked about that, and they wanted to know if we ever got funding for it. It was a self-funded project, as far as I know.
Yeah, I think it was.
So we had to pay for that one out of our grant out of your own deep pockets.
I paid for it in many ways.
He's still paying for it, ladies and gentlemen. So anyway, lots of fun things you can do over the weekend, and you can spend time with us here at KPCG as well. You can download the programs from kpcg.fm if you prefer to do it that way, or listen live. Either way, we're fine with that. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, talk about an interesting story about how Donald Trump plans to build the wall and how he's going to pay for it. Right after this, Trumpet Radio Live.
We'll be right back to Trumpet Radio Live.
Greetings, I'm Ryan Malone, host of Music for Life. And did you know how much influence William Shakespeare had on music history? We are going to explore that in our next episode, the vast array of operas, ballets, orchestral, and vocal works that were inspired by his plays and writings. In our Sounds of Scripture segment, we're going to see how Shakespeare himself was heavily influenced by the Bible, particularly its poetry. And in our Classroom Corner segment, we will explore what music education was like back in the Middle Ages and the Renaissance. So join me to experience what the bard himself called the touches of sweet harmony on our next next episode of Music for Life, The Shakespearean Influence.
This Monday at 4 p.m. Central on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm.
Thanks for joining us on this weekend edition of Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG, online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. And if you'd like to email us, send those comments to comments@kpcg.fm. And you can tell us where you're listening from, and then we can determine if you come from an attractive city or not. It's very important to us.
We'll reply and tell you.
Yeah. Tell you where you rank on the attractive scale. Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon with you here today. This is a interesting write-up that you have, Grant, and this has been in the news lately because Donald Trump went down to Mexico, of course, talked about immigration. He's been talking about that throughout his entire campaign, and he's brought up that he is going to have a wall built and Mexico's going to pay for it, and the crowd erupts in cheers, and then others erupt in laughter and scorn. But he's got a plan in place here. What's his plan for this wall?
Well, the mainstream media and the Democratic Party have really heaped scorn on him after he initially said that the government of Mexico would pay for the wall. And meanwhile, Donald Trump has been actually building a pretty good relationship with Mexico's president. That's something that you won't hear from the general media, though. Donald Trump has been discussing with the Mexican president using assets seized from drug cartels and other illicit drug trade to actually pay for the wall. And America has already seized nearly $9 billion in assets from the drug cartels. And it happens to be that Donald Trump estimates the wall will only cost between $8 and $10 billion.
Yeah, it's a really good idea, I think, just listening to it here kind of briefly. And I had wondered that when he said, well, Mexico will pay for it. And I thought, well, how are you going to make them pay for this wall? But that's a good point. I had not thought about all of the money and such that they've seized from these cartels.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good use for it, I think.
It is. And America and Mexico then have the incentive to stop the cartels because then neither government actually has to pay for the wall. It says here, advocates of the Make the Cartels Pay plan believe it has the added benefit of punishing the worst of the worst who bring violence to our streets and prey on innocent Mexicans and Americans, while then giving political cover to both leaders to accomplish their objectives. This way, there's less conflict between the two governments. Both sides can seize assets from the cartels and contribute to the same fund to build the wall.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, too, thinking about Mexico and their president and their leadership. I haven't heard too much or looked too much at what their perspective is on immigration. I mean, I would imagine they don't want people just pouring out of their country. They want to have a pretty good country as well. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And so it seems like if they were thinking clearly, they would want to limit people just fleeing out of their country as well, or using it as some sort of a route to get into the U.S. from some other country. I mean, they are a country,
mm-hmm.
And if everybody leaves, what, are they just going to sit there? Nobody's going to be there? Like, don't they want to be a great country, too? That's one thing that's always a little bit ignored, I think, is, well, what about some pride in their country and making that a really good country? That would be great.
Mexicans are just fleeing by the millions to go work in America, and at the same time, because Americans every single year spend about $100 billion on illegal drugs, the cartels are ravaging Mexico, fighting amongst themselves to be the prime supplier for America. If we built a wall and we took all the assets from the cartels, they wouldn't have a big market in America, and they wouldn't be fighting and tearing apart Mexico.
Yeah, it seems like they would have an interest in controlling that as well, as you said. So, of course, this is something where that we already have the money, right? I mean, it's already been seized, according to this, so it's sitting there.
Pretty much.
And does it say what they do with those funds in general? Is there any idea on that?
That's anyone's guess, I guess. It says that every single year the cartels actually make around $25 to $30 billion. So there's a lot more money to take from them if we catch them at the border, especially. So even beyond building the wall, it's going to be a net positive for both governments. Both governments making an income, stopping this group that's harming both nations.
Yeah, and then you know, ideally, you'd shut down the cartels if you could. But as has been pointed out plenty of times on the Key of David and other programs, it is easy to look at the cartels, and people should, because it's a problem. But they're selling to people that want the product in the U.S. And so you really, the U.S. has to look at itself as well and say, well, if there was nobody here who wanted it, it wouldn't be here. So there's multiple sides to that problem.
Yeah, what we have to do is cut off the supply and just deprive all these Americans of their drugs. What's going to then happen is then gangs in America will be fighting amongst themselves to supply the drugs. And then we'll just, it'll be a lot easier to shut down those gangs than it will be the cartels, though. They have a lot less resources.
Well, it's interesting, too, and it's a little bit of a, I guess, kind of an aside from this exact topic, but just when you look at drugs in general, they've kind of given up on the war on drugs. Like, well, we can't do anything about it, so we'll just let it happen. Instead of fighting back and saying, no, we're going to ramp it up more. If you have a war on drugs and it's not working, well, you should have a tougher war on drugs.
Yeah.
You should ramp it up as opposed to decriminalize it, as some people were suggesting, that you decriminalize those activities. So that is something that is kind of, people have kind of thrown up their hands almost and said, like, well, what are you going to do? Well,
yeah.
You got to stop it.
It's insanity to say, well, let's just give up on the war on drugs. Let's just, because so many people are breaking the law, let's make it legal. You know, let's make murder legal if too many people are committing murder. Let's make armed robbery legal if too many people are doing that. You can't just give up in the fight to uphold the law. It feels like we're so close to largely eliminating the drug problem. Build a really high wall and a wall that goes really deep underground. And if they're trying to dig underneath and you actually have a border patrol at the wall, how are they going to get away with digging a hole right in front of the wall? There's a lot of ways to even just stop the flow back and forth between Mexico and America. And then you narrow it down to the gangs in America that are a lot smaller and can be crushed, because pretty much the government knows where these gangs hide out.
Yeah, I mean, when the upcoming debates, I would love to hear a real honest discussion about how they're going to stop drugs. But I'm sure that won't come up. Now, I don't know. Maybe somebody will bring it up in some way. But a real concrete plan. But it seems like, again, they've just kind of given up on it, when really it could be solved pretty easily. Well, I shouldn't say easily, but I mean practically. You could take some steps and solve it in a lot of ways. And it's interesting, too, when you think about a wall. I guess there's this idea out there that it's a bad idea. That's what the liberal media likes to say. That it, somehow it's a terrible thing. I have property, right? I own a piece of property. My neighbor has a fence. It's his fence. And I'm glad it's there, because it makes a clear delineation, and it gives him privacy. It gives me privacy. If I want to go over there, I could, you know, say, hey, could I come over here? But I'm happy to stay where I am, and he's happy to stay where he is. It's not a problem for me. It's a boundary, and I appreciate it. I think good, solid boundaries are fine. The only time it bothers people is if you're being held somewhere where you don't want to be held, which, of course, would be a problem, I suppose, or if you're illegally trying to get somewhere where you're not supposed to be. And they act like if they put up a wall or something like that, no one can ever come in again in the history of the U.S. It's crazy. It's just to prevent illegals from coming in.
As if that's the worst thing ever, to keep people from abusing our system. And so many of the people who come here are still able to receive a lot of government benefits somehow, even though they're not legal citizens. That's just amazing how, even when they are legalized, I mean, an overwhelming number of those who come here illegally are dependent then on the welfare system.
There are natural borders. You know, I don't. Is anyone mad at the Atlantic Ocean? How dare you keep the Europeans out of the U.S.? I mean, it's a natural border. It's good. And really, if you read history, anytime they try to shift borders around, like after wars and such, it very rarely is it work well, unless there is a natural divide. If there's like a mountain range, hey, that's your side, this is our side, that works a little better. If they try to split it right down the middle of a plain, that gets to be a difficulty, because there's no clear border and people kind of mix around, and then usually there's conflict again.
Yeah, and then on the southern border, in a lot of places, it's just completely wide open and you can run across the train tracks and into a new country. That just makes no sense at all. How does that benefit anybody? Mexico is losing so many of their laborers to America, and America's taking on 11 million people that it can't really provide for when they can't provide for themselves. So apparently the government is expected to do that for them.
Yeah, and if you were to believe what's said, I mean, Mexico's losing all their valedictorians. So,
yeah, that's all the best people are coming to America.
Only the best, yeah, so we're getting the benefit.
And that, even if you just think about that for 5 seconds, that makes no sense. If they were doing so well, why would they leave?
Right.
If they were doing well where they were.
Yeah, yeah, I'm on course here to be the valedictorian of my high school. I'm going to get out of here as soon as possible. doesn't make sense. But anyway, it's an interesting idea. I don't know what'll come of it, but this is an interesting write-up. Trump camp mulls using seized cartel assets to pay for wall. And getting closer here to the election, some of the candidates, I would assume, are going to have to start formulating some more specifics like this. We'll see if that actually happens.
A core attack that Hillary Clinton has leveled against Trump is that it's hard to imagine him being the president. Here he is with a world leader, and he's working out a really good plan already. They're already preparing for the possibility of him being the president, and the Mexican leader actually likes what Trump has proposed.
Who writes these, like, these policies of, like, how to attack somebody? Well, I can't imagine them doing that.
I know.
Okay.
Okay.
Whatever. But I can.
I can't imagine Hillary Clinton being the president either. Because if you think about it, Hillary Clinton, there's never been a female president, so it is actually harder to imagine a female president, even in just that way. So to say that she can't imagine him being the president when he's a successful male businessman, and there have been other ones who have been the president before, a little bit harder to pull that off.
Not a fact-based
no,
argument, just sort
really.
Of generality. this is an interesting write-up here, one last story today. It's from the Business Insider. And I think it's really interesting because it's talking about what goes on in jails, and which is always sort of a fascinating topic, I guess. There's TV shows about it. Mm-hmm. And but what I'm always interested in is how people go into the prison system, and very rarely do they come out better off. In most cases, they're worse. And this from Business Insider, it says, an aspiring police officer who went undercover in a jail for 2 months describes why violence is almost necessary behind bars. So this guy, he's an aspiring police officer. I think it's part of a documentary for A&E. It's called 60 Days In, and they put some people in a jail in Clark County, Jeffersonville, Indiana, and it follows them around and shows what life is like. So it'd actually probably be pretty interesting.
Oh, wow. That's not something I would sign up for.
No. No. They say inmates strategically use fights to settle disputes and climb the political ladder, you know, within the jail there. And if inexperienced inmates can't adapt to their dangerous surroundings, they'll live in constant fear of another beating. So this is the type of situation that people are put into. And I guess they're serving their time, and it is a punishment. But the hope is that they'll be reformed, and when they come out, they'll come back into normal society, and they'll function well. It can happen occasionally, and it does happen, but the majority of people don't seem to want to or aren't able to adapt back to a normal life, especially if they've been in there a long time. Or a lot of times they come out more hardened than when they went in. And I just think it highlights how the prison system is just a debacle.
It is, and that's why other nations that try a rehabilitative method for prisons have become more respected in that way, because at least that way you're trying to help someone become a useful member of society again. It's not all about just lowering the boom on somebody. I don't think, like in Norway, they should have the 4-star hotel that someone's living in,
right,
where they have the whole place to themselves. But, I mean, there could be more boundaries in prisons, so at least there's no way to fight all the time.
Right. They say one of the volunteers, a guy named Ryan, observed that a strict social hierarchy governed his pod of inmates. Fights broke out between members of different social groups over virtually any perceived slight, from spreading gossip or talking too loudly at night to reneging on a deal to trade hash browns. So, I mean, the currency basically is contraband and violence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the life that they're in. They say, this guy says, one thing the public doesn't know about is that in jail, violence is almost necessary. It's a way that that society, if you will, keeps its peace. It instills fear. And so if somebody's going through that and they come out, how are they supposed to adapt to a lawful society without using violence if they've been, you know, exposed to it for years?
It's hard to imagine how they could do anything right when they get out of prison. They're just so scarred long term by the things they've seen and experienced in there. People talk about prison reform all the time and making things legal so we can have fewer people in the prison systems. Why not just keep people apart more in the prisons so that certain groups are not always clashing with each other?
Yeah, they say there's clique leaders that arrange the fights as calculated moves to address the shifting dynamics of the pod. It says if there is a white guy that happens to be in a disagreement with a Hispanic guy or a black guy, instead of those guys fighting, which could potentially cause a race riot to break out, other people would fight. So you're going to pick a black guy, he'll fight another black guy. Or a white guy will fight another white guy from these different groups to settle the score because they don't want it to become racial. Mm. They've got like their own system of justice within the prison. And with all this, I just think, well, where are the wardens? You know, where are the officers to say that's enough? You know, but they just let them go a lot of times.
In the movies, you always see prison guards up there in those sniper towers. But when do they ever shoot? It seems like if they knew they could get shot dead for getting in a single fight, that might stop a lot of it too.
It would definitely stop it, but they let them work out their own little, you know, system here. And but again, if you think about this in terms of being rehabilitated and being released, what type of a person are you releasing? I mean, quite frankly, aren't they kind of taught to live like an animal?
Yeah, it's like releasing a caged animal. That's exactly what I was about to say too. They have no idea of how society is, and some of them have been in there so long that even society has changed a lot by the time they get out, and they're not used to how things work.
And they say that merely accepting the challenge of a fight is enough to earn the respect of other inmates, so you got to fight, regardless of the outcome. But refusing to participate is considered the ultimate act of cowardice among inmates. Failure to adapt to the jail's unwritten rules can be devastating to an inmate's chances of a relatively peaceful stint behind bars. If you don't pick up on those rules, you become an example, and you're what they call bad business. You never live that down. If you are labeled anything negative, you stay like that until you prove otherwise. The burden of proof is inverted. It's on you to prove that you're not that person, and if you don't, you will remain that person. So if they think you're a coward, you better go pick a fight.
Yeah, and then if you don't pick the fight, they're just going to harass you, and you'll probably just get beaten up. I'm guessing that's a big thing that'll happen if you don't accept the fight.
This guy, Ryan, who was in this documentary, he said, Ryan learned countless tips every inmate must internalize to stay afloat. Memorize the layout of every cell. Fight behind the bathroom curtain so cameras can't capture the action. Use the heel of your palm to strike other inmates. Guards can point to teeth marks on a closed fist as proof of involvement. Mm. In a pinch, a Bic pen makes a very sturdy makeshift weapon. That's the type of things these people are learning. And to put somebody in that situation for 1 month, 1 year, 10 years, 20 years, and then at some point say, well, you've served your time, go back to a normal life. How is that possible? These people are not being rehabilitated.
Think of the way someone would analyze a room when they walk into a restaurant. These are the people who are the weakest, who I could take out the quickest. Here are all the potential weapons I could use. This is the way they've been thinking for years. That's a dangerous way to think and then be out there in public with no restrictions on your behavior.
And there's plenty of examples of people that have spent years and years and years in this situation and do get released, and maybe they're not looking to cause trouble, but they don't know what to do. So they inevitably will commit a crime to go back because they're used to that. That gives them a place. It gives them a sense of, you know, a home sort of in a weird, perverted way, but it's a home for them. And I've seen a few documentaries on it where people, they might be the big shot in the prison, but they get out in the world and they're not. And so they go back because they want to be in that spot in the pecking order again.
As bad as prison is, it's almost like maybe it's too good in a way for a lot of people so that they actually want to go back. I mean, if it was really so bad for all of them, then why would you ever commit a crime to go back? But it's just at that point, I guess they just have no other way of interacting with people unless it's in that wild kind of environment.
They just get used to it. I've seen the same sort of thing with, say, military personnel that have done several tours wherever it might be, and they come back and they don't know what to do. And so a lot of times I've read stories about people that they'll join up again as many times as they can, or they'll just become sort of vigilantes that go and fight for different armies because that's what they know. And that's just something about the human mind. We kind of go back to what we know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so the Bible says that if you train up a child in the way that he should go, he'll stay that way. And that's what they're doing in these jails. They're not kids, but at the same time, some of them get in pretty early. They're training them for 20 years to live like animals, to fight to stay alive another day, and then, you know, go free.
Yeah, it just seems like there's not a whole lot of intervention in the prisons either. All these different clique leaders are able to discuss who's going to fight and where are all the guards to at least keep them from planning these different violent activities. Probably their entertainment a lot of the time is violence.
Yeah, it's not a good situation. It's going to be an A&E documentary show. 60 days in, I'm sure it'll be a little rough around the edges. I'm not saying I'd recommend it, but it's a yeah. It's an interesting look anyway from somebody that had been on the inside, and it's just another example of a system of man that just doesn't work very well. That'll do it for us on this weekend edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. Myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you back here next week. Thanks for joining us on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG. We're online, kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.